So Rabbi Yisrael, we're starting to read today the book of Yeshua, Sefer Yeshua, the book of Joshua. And as is the custom, I will give a little introduction and overview of the book. As always, an introduction that we do in the beginning of a book cannot be said to be a summary or a true overview. That would be something that we would have to do after we finish reading it. And it could be some kind of orientation, some kind of GPS, some kind of map to know where we are, where we're coming from, where we're going, and in what kind of structure we're going to be going through the book. So I don't really have a chart like for the structure, but I will show you the header from the first part of the book, and we'll be able to understand how the second part works also. So in general, the book of Yeshua is a direct continuation of the end of the book of Devarim, Sefer Mishneh Torah, Deuteronomy. As Rashi already noticed in the beginning of this book, Sefer Yeshua, maybe some other Mefarshim disagree with the precise reading that Rashi does in the big first psukim of this book, but it's definitely agreed by almost everyone that this book straightforwardly continues the narrative that was ended in the end of Sefer Devarim with the death of Moshe. And if you read the report of the death of Moshe in Sefer Devarim, it even explicitly has a note about Yeshua ben Nun inheriting his position and continuing the power that Moshe gave him, both the wisdom and prophecy possibly as Moshe gave him and the political leadership of the people. That's one of the psukim at the end of Sefer Devarim. And also going back all the way to the end of Sefer Bamidbar, which as we've seen there, has kind of the end of the story of the travels in the desert as they're preparing to enter Eretz Canaan, Eretz Yisrael. One of the important things that Moshe did when he was told that he will die and not enter the land was appoint a leader after him, and Hashem gave him Yeshua to be the leader after him. And this is repeated three or four times. There's different steps and stages of that story of the appointment of Yeshua, culminating in the last one where we discussed the pasuk after Moshe died that says Yeshua ben Nun mole ruach chachma, and so on. It explicitly talks about these two things that Yeshua ben Nun had, the ruach chachma, which is what received from Moshe, the spirit of prophecy or of wisdom. And the people listened to him. In other words, that he was an accepted political leader. All of the people listened to him, just like they listened to Moshe. So this is, in some sense, foreshadowing that this will not last, right? After Yeshua, and especially when we get into later, Tekufas HaShoftim or Tekufas HaMelachim, the kings, there wasn't always one leader who everyone listened to, who everyone obeyed. But Moshe and Yeshua are the universally accepted leaders everyone accepts. After Yeshua, it's not clear that there was during the Shoftim, although we sometimes count like a succession chain of Shoftim. It's not clear from the book of Shoftim that each of them were leaders of the entire people. They might have been leaders only of a tribe or of some tribes. But Moshe and Yeshua were very clearly the original two leaders of the people. Moshe, the one who took them out of Mitzrayim, and Yeshua, the one that brings them into the land. And this was the inheritance that Yeshua received from Moshe. So that's the end of Sefer Devarim. And now this book just continues the narrative and picks up the story from as the first word of this first chapter in Sefer Yeshua starts, Vayi'achre Moshe Eved Hashem, and it came to be after the death of Moshe, the servant of Hashem, and we get the first command or the mitzvah, the statement, Vayomer Hashem Yeshua, as Hashem tells Yeshua. So that's for the context of this book, for the context of where it's coming from. It's similar to some other books in the Tanakh that also continue each other straightforwardly, like possibly the Sefer Shoftim, which also starts after Yeshua died. The first pasuk of Sefer Shoftim is Vayu Achre Moshe Yeshua. So very clearly, there's Toiras Moshe, which is the five books of Moshe, which end with his death. And then the next book starts Vayu Achre Moshe. Then the book of Yeshua is very clearly the book of the life of Yeshua. So very clearly modeled on these books of Moshe, which are end with his death. And Sefer Shoftim starts, Vayi Achrei Mois Yeshua, which is the end of Yeshua's life, right? Then the book of Shmuel doesn't straightforwardly continue the death of someone, because it's very clearly the beginning after some kind of breakdown, which we read in Sefer Shoftim. But the beginning of Melachim does, not entirely in the same exact way, because it starts when David HaMelech is still alive, because Sefer Shmuel is basically the book of Shmuel HaNavi, and then his appointment of David as the first monarch of the Jewish people, or Shaul, and then David, and so on. And then Sefer Melachim picks up with David about to die, and really about the succession conflicts that happened to David. So it's very important to notice that, and as distinct from the story that Sefer Melachim starts with very clearly, that David HaMelech did not succeed in creating a clear successor, at least there were several pretenders to the throne, Adonijoy and Avshalom and others, and then later with Shlomo, there's continuously the same problem until it comes to the big split after Shlomo dies with Rehavam and Yeravam. For Moshe and Yeshua, we could start safely after they die, right? Because Moshe, in his lifetime, appointed the leader after him very clearly, Yeshua. It's not clear who Yeshua appointed after him. There might have been Pinchas and Elazar. But in any case, it doesn't lead to this same kind of leadership crisis as we have later, as the entire book of Melachim, in some sense, can be said to be a chronicle of. Right? Similarly, we have in Divrei Yamim that ends, and Sefer Ezra picks up the thread, and so on. So this is enough to give us the space, the place of Sefer Yeshua within the great narrative of beginning in Sefer Shmos and Matthias Mitzrayim and ending in the end of Sefer Melachim, maybe in the end of Sefer Ezra, which is the history of the people from Mitzrayim all the way until Shivas, yeah, basically the biblical stories, which we call Nevi'im Rishonim, the first prophets, but really are, by their content, should be called the historical books, as it's called in the Septuagint. And this is the first book of the prophets, because it's the narrative of the life of Yeshua, which is the first leader after Moshe, and enjoys this prestige, similarly to Moshe, to be an accepted leader, to be a God, divinely anointed leader. Moshe himself appointed him, God himself told Moshe to appoint him, and he had the obedience of the entire people in his entire lifetime, and the people were also good on the whole times of Yeshua, as we'll say one more point now. So, now, what is this book about? It's about the great act of Yeshua. So Moshe had one great act called Yetzias Mitzrayim. Then a second, maybe we could say less great act, which is the sojourn, the travels in the desert, which is always Moshe's great act for the people, but accompanied by all the nesyonos, all the tribulations, all the averes we're reading now in Sefer Midbar and the Torah, full of problems, culminating the great tragedy of Moshe's life, where he himself didn't as exit the desert ever, never arrived in the promised land. Yeshua has one great act, which he does, which is the conquering of the land, which is divided, then subdivided into two great acts, which might themselves show some kind of weakness in the first act, as we'll see when we get chapter 13, 14, I think, in the beginning of that part of the book. But in any case, Yeshua has one great act, which is the conquest of the land. And in this sense, Yeshua is also the one who fulfills the promise that Moshe promised and didn't himself fulfill. And this is a point that the book makes explicitly several times and can be said to be the main theme of this whole book. Moshe took the Yidden out of Mitzrayim and promised them to give them the land. He never did that. That never happened. Of course, because of their sins, because of the Meraglim, because of the other problems that happened in the desert, because of Moshe's sins, because of people's sins, all of that. Yeshua did have one promise to fulfill, and Hashem and Moshe explicitly gave him this promise that you, unlike me, will succeed in giving the people the land, and he succeeds at that. And that is also ascribed to the same kind of theological justification that explained why Moshe didn't manage to get it. Moshe didn't manage again because the people weren't good enough, and Yeshua for Yeshua the people were good enough. So the book of Yeshua is probably the most triumphant book in the whole Tanakh. It doesn't describe any or almost any. There's one or two stories that we could talk about, but it doesn't describe any great tragedies, great sins, which is like the basic story of Tanakh, where people sin and then they get exiled and they get destroyed. All of that, Yeshua is the exact opposite. It's the book of we've succeeded, and we've succeeded because we were good, and God fulfilled His promises to us, which were conditional on us being good, and we were good and fulfilled that. So that's the main theme of Sefer Yeshua. And I think it's proper to his name. Like Yeshua means literally the helper or God's help. Yah HaYeshua, right? Like the Torah himself, the Torah itself in Parshas Shlach gives a kind of meaning for Yeshua's name. It says that Moshe called HaYeshua, Yah HaYeshua, which doesn't say explicitly why, but we could assume that it's adding God's help to Yah as the beginning of the Shem ben Arba Isis, God's main name, and adding that to Hayeshua, which is help. So not just a helper, but God's helper. And I would think say that Hayeshua itself is kind of a shortened version of that to begin with. But in any case, it's very clear that Yeshua's name itself symbolizes this help, this success. Help is not a very good word, or something like military success. Conquest is what's usually meant by the verb Hayeshua, Yeshua in Tanakh. And that's the task of Sefer Yeshua and Yeshua Bidin himself, his life, which corresponds to this book. Now, the book of Yeshua describes mostly two parts of this act. And within this division of two, we can work divisions, but I think the most simple way to read the book is that it is comprised of two main parts. First part is, and these two parts are known in Chazal and when they count the years in other contexts, Shkibosh v'chilek, the conquest of the land and the division of the land. And Chazal say that there were 7 years for each. They make the whole book, or at least most of it, last only 14 years. But that's already calculations of chronology. The point is that there's two main parts of Yeshua's act, which are the conquest of the land and the division of the land among the tribes, among the people, which is, again, a very important part. I'll explain both of these, why they're important. So, conquest of the land is, of course, important, and in some sense, the antagonist of this story are the kings of Canaan, the kings that were living there. This was what was promised to the people, that they would conquer the people. This was, Yeshua was also a military leader. We met him the first time in Parshas B'Shalach by Melchemes Amalek. He was the military leader who organized the war or the battle against Amalek, and he's the one, obviously, who organized the entire conquest of the land. So that's the first part. And this part is divided into several wars that are described, and there's some structure to which wars. Obviously, not every battle that Yeshua had to conquer the land is described in this book, but in some sense, it seems like there's a selection of the battles that are important, or that teach us something, or that have certain kinds of battle in some sense. That's one aspect of this part of the book. And then the second part is the part of the division of the land, and that is there probably mostly, or the most important reason to be seen for it being there, is in order to serve as sort of the record of who belongs which part. So we could say the antagonist of the second part is each tribe relative to the other tribe. It's not solving a problem between the people and the people that lived in the land before them, but it's solving the problem of the people between each other, as we've read already in Sefer Devarim Le'Sasig Gvul Re'acha. It's a very important problem, and especially in tribal lands, where lands belongs to a tribe, and then sometimes one tribe comes and claims the other tribe's land. So it's very important that we have Yeshua ben Nun, who is, again, this universally obeyed original leader of the people in Canaan, and the Jewish people in Israel, that he established the borders of each tribe and saying who lives where and so on. And there's a long series of chapters that are just geography. Most of them are not identified, or at least not 100% exactly what they mean, which place is which place. But there's long descriptions of lists of towns, lists of cities, lists of borders to describe. And the point of all of this is to serve as like an accepted authoritative list of what belongs to who. And I'm assuming that along the time which people lived in the land, what we call Bayis Rishon, all the way until the Charban Beis HaMikdash and Tzidkiyahu's times, we could assume that people would refer to this book or some version of it, whether it was canonized in the way, the form that we have had, but some version of it, which was like ascribed to Yeshua ben Nun, and said, okay, if there was a conflict, we knew this land belongs to you because it says in Sefer Yeshua, this land belongs to you because it says in Sefer Yeshua, and so on. There's a very clear division in the book between the two parts, which is a style that happens in the Tanakh many times, is that it ends with a sort of poem. It's hard to see great art in this poem, but there's a sort of poem or song. It's written in Tanakh also, and it's considered a shira, a song or a poem, and it's a list of 31 kings of Canaan, kings of cities, basically, in Canaan, that Yeshua conquered, and each one says Melech Echad, and finishes Kol Melechem Shloshim Ve'Echad. It counts at 31 kings, And this is some kind of version of an epic list of the kings that he shall conquer. And that's in chapter 12. And that ends the first part of the book, which is the conquest. And then explicitly starts the second part of the book, which is the division of the land among the tribes. There is some kind of conflict between these two parts, as I've mentioned, which is that if you read the story in the beginning of chapter 13, which starts the division, you will see that it's not that he divided everything after he conquered it. Many parts were divided before he conquered it because the conquest turned out to be more complicated than planned, as always happens in war. But the division was more important. And I think this goes to show the point that I'm making, that we need Yeshua's authority to resolve the conflicts that would have arisen between the tribes without this. So even if later people conquer, and different tribes will conquer different parts and so on. I've seen Sefer Shaftan beginning some of these stories. It was important for Yeshua himself to already sort of put his stamp on the division of land so that people later shouldn't have conflicts over what belongs to who. So that's the basic description of Sefer Yeshua. Of course, the beginning and end of some more stories. Beginning the story of the crossing of the Jordan, of the Jordan River to enter into the land. The end has some stories of how the tribes of Gad and Reuven went back to their place and what happened with that, and a very important story of Yeshua ben Nun's last sort of will or last sort of speech to the people, trying to ensure that they still keep the Torah after Yeshua dies, and sort of created a covenant. Another again on that, very analogous to what Moshe did before he died, and other leaders, Shmuel and so on. But those are sort of, we could see as additions to the main thrust of the story. And all of this was recognized by Chazal, by the Gemara, by the Medrash, that said that if the Jewish people have not sinned, we would have had only six books of the Bible, which are the five books of Tanakh, of Chumash, of Moshe, and Sefer Yeshua. And they explain, Pnei Sefer Yeshua, he erkosh l'Eretz Yisrael. By this they mean mostly the second part. Erka means something like the worth, or I think some word that means like arkos. Like in Gittin we talk about if you buy a land, you have to be malib arkos, which means something like put it into the record, into the official record, like now we have a land registry or something where people record which land belongs to, the title. And Sefer Yeshua is our title, not only, so both relevant, relative to the nations which were conquered and also relative to the tribes, relative to each other. And this is very important. And this statement, if we had not sinned, it very clearly expresses what I just said, that all the other books are stories of failure and trying to fix those failures, which is the job of the prophets, and the historical books describe the situation, and the prophets are the ones trying to actually solve the problems. So if Yeshua is the one successful book in Tanakh where it just describes how the promise to get Eretz Yisrael happened and was fulfilled, and the people were good, and that's the story of Sefer Yeshua.